This is LBC London News.
25 minutes past four right now, and as you heard a few moments ago, police in Orlando have revealed the gunman who killed 49 people at a gay nightclub told a 911 operator the US needed to stop bombing Iraq and Syria. Transcripts between officers and Omar Mateen have been released. Let's now go live to our Washington correspondent, Simon Marks. A very good afternoon to you, Simon. What more can you tell us on this?
Well, Chris, this is fascinating. These are the transcripts of three separate telephone calls that the FBI and police had with Omar Mateen during the course of that three-hour standoff at the Pulse nightclub in Orlando 8 days ago. In all, 28 minutes of telephone conversation time was racked up during the course of those calls. And what we now know is that from the very first moment that Omar Mateen made contact with the authorities, he was directly tying the attack to U.S. policy in Iraq and Syria, identifying himself as an Islamic soldier, telling negotiators to tell the U.S. government to stop bombing campaigns in Syria and Iraq, saying that that was why he was, as he put it, out here right now. And from the get-go, he also acknowledged who he was, telling the emergency operator that took the first call, "I'm in Orlando and I did the shootings," after briefly speaking in Arabic during the start of the telephone call. I do think this raises questions about President Obama's assertion that Omar Mateen made some kind of last-minute pledge of allegiance, as the president put it, to Islamic State. And it does suggest that from the very first moment that the authorities were responding to that crisis in Orlando, they were very aware of the fact that in some fashion this could have been an act of terror that was inspired by, or at least attempting to honour, Islamic State.
And we heard from the FBI that for the meantime they're not going to be releasing audio of the of those phone calls, are they?
No, that's correct. We're just seeing transcripts at the moment. And there was, by the way, a Freedom of Information Act legal battle just to get the transcripts released. Various media organizations came together to try and force the FBI's hand on that, and ultimately succeeded in making sure that these transcripts were published. They are not entirely free from redaction. There are various parts of the transcripts where the FBI is holding detail back, including interestingly, the names of the groups that Omar Mateen did pledge allegiance to. We know that at least one of them was Islamic State, although FBI spokesmen have said previously that he also pledged allegiance at one point to the Nusra Front, which is at battle with Islamic State, raising questions in their minds as to just how entirely thought out his ideological motivation for all of this may have been. I think there will be continuing legal attempts to try and get the audio released, but for the moment we've got the transcripts, and it does certainly offer more of a window into the crazed mind of Omar Mateen, and also more of a window into what police were dealing with hour by hour as that situation in Orlando unfolded.
Now, Simon, let's move to the other big news in the US today. Donald Trump, he's fired his campaign manager just 1 month ahead of the Republican Party convention, and just a couple of days before the presumed presidential candidate is going to be arriving right here in Scotland. Events really moving very quickly for Mr. Trump. Give us a sense of what's happened so far.
I think they are. He's had a dreadful few days, Chris. To put this all into context, his standing in opinion polls is in complete freefall. I mean, you know that 10 to 12 days ago, he enjoyed a lead over Hillary Clinton in national polls. That lead has now completely disappeared. And if you look at a graph, you can literally see Donald Trump's popularity plummeting vertically. And we don't know where the floor is. This decision to fire Corey Lewandowski, who's been a very controversial figure at the heart of the Trump campaign. On the one hand, he's the man who has been arguing that the campaign must let Donald be Donald and don't force him to become more presidential or to try and control the way in which he presents himself. On the other hand, he's accused of being extraordinarily aggressive, not just with members of the media who have been trying to cover Donald Trump, but also with Republican Party leaders and also his fellow staff within the campaign. As to why Donald Trump did this, well, the Trump campaign, and I should say it was entirely unexpected, the Trump campaign is saying that this had been a plan that had been in the works for quite a while. And here's Barry Bennett, who's a campaign advisor for the Trump team, talking a few minutes ago on Fox News here.
They wanted to go a different direction, and, you know, it's his campaign. He's entitled to do that. Corey is a good friend of mine, and I hate to see this happen.
So they wanted to go in a different direction. They couldn't, of course, go in a different direction as far as the candidate was concerned. So a senior staffer takes the fall.
And what about this idea that he might still be derailed from becoming the party's presidential candidate? How on earth would that work?
Well, that is an idea that was put into public conversation over the course of the weekend by none other than Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, the most powerful elected Republican here in Washington, D.C. And it indicates that Republican grandees are now panicking. They are very worried that Donald Trump isn't just taking himself down. He's going to take everybody else down with him, with the very loose talk that he's been using on the campaign trail. And so Paul Ryan, in an appearance on NBC over the course of the weekend, made it very clear that if there was an attempt, a last-ditch attempt, to try and derail Donald Trump from becoming the presidential nominee, he, Mr. Ryan, wouldn't stand in the way of it.
This is a very strange situation. This is a very unique nominee. But I feel as a responsibility, institutionally, as the Speaker of the House, that I should not be leading some chasm in the middle of our party, because you know what I know that will do? That will definitely knock us out of the White House.
So Mr. Ryan's obviously trying to head that off. He still is officially endorsing Donald Trump as the Republican Party nominee, but he says he's only doing that in his ceremonial position as Speaker of the House of Representatives and Chairman of the Republican Party Conference, a convention, and he was essentially winking at anybody who out there might be thinking of mounting a challenge to go ahead and give it a go. So I think there is a real sense of the possibility of some last-minute attempt to stop Donald Trump from becoming the nominee.
But it's not only the inner workings of the Trump campaign that has Republicans worried, is it? They've got to be looking at these poll numbers you mentioned. They seem to be sinking every time he opens his mouth.
Absolutely. Let's take a listen to a couple of the things that he said over the course of the last few days. First of all, he gave voice in an interview on CBS on Sunday to the idea that in the aftermath of the Orlando nightclub massacre, the United States should perhaps consider racial profiling in criminal investigations. Here's what he said.
We really have to look at profiling. We have to look at it seriously. And other countries do it. And it's not the worst thing to do.
But the problem with that, of course, is that racial profiling is unconstitutional. There is a written document here that protects the rights of Americans, regardless of their religious or ethnic background. So Donald Trump there put forward a proposal that almost certainly wouldn't pass muster in any legal challenge. He's also been talking very loosely about guns. He said last week that if only people inside that Orlando nightclub had access to weaponry, they could have fired back at the gunman and some of them would have been alive. Now, even the National Rifle Association doesn't believe that nightclub revelers should be going into places like nightclubs carrying weapons. But the language that Donald Trump has been using on the campaign trail, even over the weekend, about Orlando and about guns, just to the ears of many Republicans, doesn't sound very presidential. Take a listen.
If you think Orlando was the end of it with this weak attitude and this pathetic president that we have, it wasn't, folks. It wasn't. It wasn't. This is just the beginning.
And all of that, I think, is really fueling this idea among Republican Party leaders here in Washington that they are now in a very, very deep sense of trouble. With Donald Trump unable to win the election this coming November, plummeting in the opinion polls, and they fear dooming the hopes of members of Congress who will also be running for re-election this November. All of this playing into the idea that perhaps at the 11th hour and 59th minute they've got to make a change.
But time must be very short for someone to come forward and put themselves up as a replacement candidate. I mean, what stops Donald Trump from then running as an independent?
Well, that could obviously happen. I mean, there are names out there that keep being floated. Condoleezza Rice, the former Secretary of State, she was asked over the weekend if she was interested in serving as Donald Trump's running mate. She said absolutely not. But, you know, it's not inconceivable that she might be a compromise candidate. Paul Ryan, the Speaker of the House of Representatives, could himself ultimately say, look, we're in so much turmoil, let me put myself up at the convention as a compromise candidate. And, of course, Donald Trump could then throw his toys out of the pram and say, right, I'm going to run as an independent and take my supporters with me. I think Republican leaders may conclude that his brand is becoming so tarnished that if they did emerge from the convention with a different presidential candidate over the 5 months between now and Election Day, perhaps that candidate would be able to pick off the supporters of Donald Trump and reduce Donald Trump to a fringe candidate. That's a very high-stakes gamble that they'd be taking, but they may like the look of it, given that they worry what Donald Trump is doing to the long-term prospects for the Republican Party.
Now, of course, Mr. Trump's going to be in Scotland later this week. Presumably he's going to be accompanied by what can only be described as an enormous press contingent.
Brace yourselves. I think there's no question that you're going to see Donald Trump's every move now dogged by an even larger contingent from the press, because this firing of the campaign manager over the last 90 minutes or so was very unexpected and does provide a further sense of panic within the Trump campaign, within the Republican Party more generally, and I think his every move, including every step that he takes up at Turnberry and in Scotland, his every move now is going to be examined for meaning and reported back here in the United States.
Yes, certainly going to be a fascinating week, obviously, with us having the referendum as well on Thursday. Thank you very much, Simon Marks, our Washington correspondent, live for us in America.
This message isn't aimed at you.